Number 12B.
All right. So let's take the first big subject of principle and consider it a bit closer. Here we have said that the epitome, no matter how we word it, we don't have to word it the way I have worded it in my book, but it's still showing really here principle that through faith in God we partake of that principle. In other words, that principle comes to us, translates itself to us, and triggers off really the word order. Namely, what is that word order? The word order is nothing else but to clarify to our consciousness step by step what that righteousness of principle means. See, the subtones must always substantiate the main tone. The subtones are not telling us a different story. They are only viewing from seven different angles the main subject. So the subtones are substantiating the main tone. That's something that one has to know when one reads all our books and on all these books on the Bible and so on, that when he shows subtones, or when we talk about subtones, or when we talk about the textbook and the layout of the textbook, that the subtones are only what another term would you have to substantiate the main tone, to enlarge the main tone, to show the main tone from seven different angles, to embellish the main tone from the seven different angles. So the main tone and the subtone must have one common denominator always. They must be directed to the same thing. Here, the main point would be divine righteousness, the righteousness that is before God, as he puts it sometimes. We can say the principle of being. And now we would have to see in the subtones what that implies in mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that we are a principled idea, that we are righteous before God. What does that mean? We are a principled idea. So that's what the subtones would have to bring out. All right, let's see in a very big way, without going into every verse and things like that, that's not so interesting for us, but the subtones in a big way, what do they tell us? We come to principle as mind. How is the righteousness of principle manifesting itself as mind to men? Still always to men, we are under the Christianity matrix. What does Paul bring out here? Obedience to the faith, yes. He is, yeah, he talks about being obedient to the faith, but that he is a saint. That through this, you see, obedience to the faith is only the approach, because always through faith we receive grace. Now we are considering here what we get from grace, so through obedience to the faith, that's your attitude towards it, we are, as he calls them, saints. Man is idea, right at the beginning. He calls them saints, or idea. We will call them ideas. See, again, this is a point perhaps one should remember. The whole Bible does not talk about the term idea, either in Hebrew nor in Greek. There's not one reference in the whole Bible with the term idea. And the Bible has a lot of terms. Christian Science textbook is written and the term idea appears over 200-300 times. It's a main term in Christian Science. Does that mean that they didn't know idea? No. Doesn't mean that. They only did not know how to word it, they didn't have the terminology for it. And that's in a way surprising, because at the time of Paul, one would have thought perhaps that he would know it. because the term idea was common with the Greek philosophers in the 5th and 4th century before Christ already, with Plato. He already talked quite extensively about idea. And it's interesting that the Bible never used, at least the New Testament never uses it. That the Old Testament doesn't use it is quite clear, because the Old Testament, for them, the Greeks were just anathema. They were the worst of the worst, you see. There was no greater enmity than between the Jews and the Greeks. The Greeks, because of historical facts, you see, they brought in, with Alexander the Great, they brought in the Greek culture and the Greek temples and everything, Greek, Greek, Greek. And naturally, that was a foreign nation for the Jewish, and therefore they fought it. So they didn't take their language and, into their vocabulary. But Paul could have done it. See, he would have known it, but he didn't use it. And I feel he was wise not to use it, because the Jews would not have understood it. I guess that's as far as it could go. So he had to use other terms to bring out idea. I guess instead of saying that man is the idea of God, he said, you are a saint, which is the biblical version of idea of God, of man. Yeah. So all these things we have to take into consideration when we read the Bible. See, we have to read it in the way that 2,000 years ago people were thinking, and what kind of symbolization they had at that time. All right. So here we would see as a first subtone, you see, that principle would say to man, you are also a principled idea. You are principled. You are not something else than God himself. You are a saint. Yes. When it comes to spirit, what do we see here? What this divine principle really is when it justifies man. We always have to see that under that tonality, that principle justifies man. So at the point of mind, he says, I justify you, you are an idea, you are a saint. At the point of spirit, principle justifies itself, brings out in man, justified man, at the point of spirit as what? Yeah? That he brings forth fruit, that is fruitful. How many mortals feel that he is fruitful? Most people are frustrated, they are not fruitful. They don't think they are fruitful. They think, oh, it's a bore. Everything is a bore. Everything is frustrated. Here, it's quite different. It says, you know, when you are principled, then from that principle I can bring forth fruit in you. If I come to you to Rome, I come because I want to impart more fruits to you. I want to impart more what he called spiritual gifts. Spiritual gifts. Because that belongs to man. That does not belong to God alone. It translates itself to the point of idea. You are fruitful. You have all the spiritual gifts. Aren't we justified in that way? It's a great sense of being justified, being principled. If we go further to soul, what do we see there? Yes? Yes, he begins to manifest the sinless sense. Yes. Could you tell me what he is telling also in this passage? Why he had to bring up that point that man is sinless? Why did he have to bring it up? Were they so sinless before? Now, you have a whole, if you ever want to have a good list of what the sinner is, you just read those few verses, and he tells them what they could be. I read you this from another translation. He tells them, gosh, you know, they must have been a bad lot, you know. And the funny thing is, he writes that to Rome, but when he writes to Corinth, it's even worse. You see? So it seems to be all over. God therefore handed them over to disgraceful passions, their women exchange their normal practices of sexual intercourse for something which is abnormal and unnatural. Similarly, the men turning from natural intercourse with women were swept into lustful passions for one another. Men with men performed this shameful horror, receiving, of course, in their own personalities the consequences of sexual perversity. They became filled with wickedness, rottenness, greed, and malice. Their minds became steeped in envy, murder, quarrelsomeness, deceitfulness, and spite. They became whisperers behind doors, stabbers in the back, God-haters. They overflowed with insolent pride and boastfulness, and their minds teemed with diabolic invention. They scoffed at duty to parents. They mocked at learning, recognized no obligation of honor, lost all natural affection, and had no use for mercy. Was really something. I think it's good to, you know, one overlooks these things very often and just quotes in the Bible sermon, you know, in the Bible lesson, just a very nice quotation, hope against hope and things like that. But well, we must see what kind of a universe Paul had to convert. Think of that whole, if you begin to read Corinthians, it just looks the same way. They say naturally, well, most of these places like Corinth and Ephesus and so on were harbors where the sailors came in. And you know, when sailors came in, it seems that the place always is not quite so, well, as it should be, yes. But he went to these places. I think he had there a very good ground for a new idea. Not so much better than with those who are self-justified and self-conceited and so on, and think they have position and honor and so on. It's difficult to get at them. But this apparently was his audience, and he did a good job with them. All right, so actually what he wants to show, that's why I asked this question, you said, well, man is a sinless state, but I also had to show, see, we have to show what was the wrong state, because only if we consider the wrong state, we see why the days of creation order has come in, because the days of creation order only comes to darkness, not to the light, it comes to darkness. And has to enlighten darkness, therefore it has to enlighten the counterfeit of mind, the counterfeit of spirit, the counterfeit of soul, the counterfeit of principle, life, truth, and love. So here he shows how man was always reversing everything. He made out of God idolatry, and therefore he describes the aspects of a sinful state of manhood in order to show the grace of God. Say, I bring you something else. You are a saint. You are full of spiritual gifts. And therefore, fundamentally, you are sinless. And you can be sinless right away. It's just a matter of accepting the principle. Not doing the works of the law, but to accept the divine principle that a soul makes you sinless. We come to principle as principle. Yes? What's the point here? I don't like if everybody shouts together, just one. One at a time. Yes? Working the works of principle. Yes? So, man works the works of principle. It is here, and it's actually everyone, works the works of principle. It's here where he says that God is no respecter of person, that he doesn't consider the status of a person, if he is high up or low down. It's funny, you know, when something that we don't quite feel in Europe, which I always hear over here, You always speak of the people high up in Boston. We don't know that. What is people high up in Boston? What are they high up? Because they were a friend of a friend and took them to Boston and said, I give you a good job. Are they high up? There is no high up. There's only one high up, and that's principal. I can't see why Boston is high up, why those who work there are high up. They are only there to administer the business, the nitty-gritties. But the understanding that goes on, the demonstration of principle that goes on, it doesn't go on high up. It goes on with every man, with everyone who knows, everyone who knows the principle. That's what he wants to say. There is no respect of person. There is no high ups. There's only one man, and that's what principle works in man. Only that is man, what principle works in man. That's why always those who win the war are those in the front, but not at headquarters. At headquarters they have nice suits on and eat well. In the front they are dirty, they fight, they don't go to sleep, they have to... But they win the war. It's the front man that wins the war. And all the spying that goes on is always at headquarters, not at the front. There the spies are not. And Paul went always to the front. He said, oh, I only go to Jerusalem to bring them some nice gifts so that they can live on. But as soon as I can, I go to Rome and I go to Spain. I go out into the world. He was a real frontier man. He felt the authority within himself and not the authority in Jerusalem. So principle really is no respecter of person. And so man only works the works of God. How justified here man is. How principled man is here at this point. Yes, therefore he says, don't judge humanly. He brings in the other, the negative also, and says, don't judge humanly. Never judge humanly. No one can judge from the outside. No one knows what goes on inside a man. And everyone is different. And we try to line up people as if there would only be one common denominator, and therefore each one should react the same way, and each one should do the way we think they should do it. That's what he wants to say. Don't judge humanly. Because principle works in men what principle works. Wants to do. And that's something else than what we would like somebody else to do. Always. It's a great change that takes place within us if we really accept that in everyone principle is working according to that individual case and not according to a scheme, schematic, routine. We come to principle as life. Yes, yes, man expresses that obedience to the principle, but how? He says also how. That's one of the main points. You see, that he says it must be the inward attitude that principle is investigating. Principle doesn't look at the outward. That can be a screen or what you call it,
a facade,
huh? And he says, life looks always into the depths of your heart and sees what's going on there. It's therefore a living faith that is required here, and not an outward faith, obedience to outward laws, just as the Jews were doing. He attacks really that whole codex of the Jews, the laws and the rules that the Jews have brought up. And in which he was brought up. So he was speaking out of his own experience. And he could see that it didn't lead anywhere. That's why Paul perhaps was such a terrific character, that he had experienced first the opposite side. So he could speak always out of experience, and I knew, I have done it. But now I have seen the new paradigm, and now I live the new paradigm. And so he wants us to show that it is an inward attitude, an inward life, he speaks, as a living of the letter, not just the letter. He goes further to truth. What does he see in truth? That's a beautiful passage here. Well, how to show how man is justified at the point of truth. How is it justified? What is the standard, the measure, the stature of man that is brought out at this point? Yes? Yes. 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 It's the saint. Yes. Yes. So he said that man is really true only before God. Huh? So let God be true and every mortal man a liar. Huh? That's his great message here. He presents the true man and the false man. Huh? The true man that is justified by principle, and the wrong man, the mortal man, who is a liar anyway. And you know that he gives there a nice sevenfold picture of men. Do you remember that? About, it's in, I don't know if you have my book. Yes, it's on page 49, right on the top, where he depicts now the liar, the mortal man as a liar. Now, the mortal man as a liar is not just a mortal mind that says one lie after the other. What he wants to really to show is what Mrs. Eddy would call what is mortal manhood. So he says he does not seek God. Can you see mind? He does not seek God. Nor does he any good spirit. He is sinful and deceitful. So his mouth is full of cursing. See, it's a false interpretation. It's wrong interpreting, wrong explaining principle. He is a murderer, life. He is destructive and inharmonious, truth, and knows no peace, love. Isn't it amazing how a man 2,000 years ago, when he was writing about the facts of being without knowing the seven synonymous term, he was presenting the subject in an ordered way. Of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth. When one reads these things, and quite often you can see this layout, even if you only take the layout of the whole of Romans and think, golly, at that time there was a man who has already seen that what is the order of the Christ translation, and have already seen that each one is bringing forth through the darkness to the light the word or the think that they knew that or felt that, and that we encounter that over and over and over and over in the Bible makes one really feel this is being itself. What Mrs. Eddy really was presenting was not just a system that she invented, but that she really listened to the harmonies of being itself, and that since thousands of years, really, that harmony was translating itself to those who were transparent for it in a scientific way, though they did not know science. So terrific. Can you see again how we could trust, really, the idea of the Christ idea? That the Christ idea, no matter if we know what it's going to do, we never know what it's going to do, but we can now always trust that what we're going to do is something that is absolutely ordered. If we could teach the prophets in an ordered way, and Jesus in an ordered way, and Paul in an ordered way, well, then we have a certain kind of a trust that being is ordered, and that it is not something mysterious, that if we listen to being, that being will come to us in an absolutely ordered scientific way.